you're one of our regular students for Self-Improvement Wednesday. Each week you get to learn something new, and each week you get to test out what you've learned on our website, where there's already a pop-up test all about today's lesson. Your lesson this week, Elizabeth and Lachlan Macquarie, the power couple of 1810. Your teacher is Grace Karskens, who teaches Australian History at the School of History and Philosophy at the University of New South Wales. Her latest book is The Colony. Good afternoon to Grace Karskens. G'day.
Richard.
Now, Lachlan Macquarie, as I mentioned, he was born in quite humble circumstances, wasn't he?
Yes, he was really humble. He probably came from a very poor cottage with a dirt floor. His mother was a fine woman, but she was illiterate. So he came from a long line of lairds, and he was ambitious to be wealthy.
He's Scottish, is he?
Scottish, yeah, on the Isle of Ulva, which is sort of on the west side of Scotland. But yeah, the family had come down over the generations, but Macquarie was determined to build up again. He got himself an education through patronage, and he got himself into the British Army, and that was the making of him. He was also someone who bombarded his superiors with requests constantly. So he was very much a man of patronage, and that becomes important later in the story.
But he climbs, assiduously climbs Absolutely. The military ladder, does he?
Yeah, he's talented, but I think the constant requests really help him on his way. And he's also very interested in becoming wealthy, and he falls in love with the beautiful Jane Jarvis in India, who he marries, and she is worth £6,000. Now, this is just like something out of Jane Austen, isn't
it? So he marries up.
He marries up.
As they say, yeah.
But unfortunately, poor Jane gets tuberculosis and she dies, and he's heartbroken. And he's in his 40s when he comes back to Scotland, and he meets his much younger cousin. She's 26, Elizabeth Campbell. And he says of her, "She would make a fine wife for a soldier."
Uh-huh.
Now, that's not terribly romantic, but it does suit Elizabeth, because Elizabeth was someone who also came from, not as modest as him, but came from a modest background.
And
she was very well educated. She was an orphan. Her parents had died young. I think that it made her very self-contained, actually. She was quite a woman. I greatly admire her. She she was well educated, and she, best of all, she knew a lot about taste and fashionable architecture and how to lay out landscapes and that sort of thing. And I think that's what he latched onto too.
Now, once he married her, they really weren't particularly intending to come to Australia. He was aged, I think, 50.
That's right.
And he was really looking forward to a life in Scotland.
That's right. He had amassed a lot of land. He had got wealthy by then. And he was going to build a castle for the hopefully growing family, which unfortunately didn't happen for them, and, you know, improve the estate and run around making the people's cottages better, all that sort of stuff. But that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Because
instead, the phone rang.
Well, the phone rang.
Not quite.
The 18th century version of the phone
but
rang.
But the message came through, didn't it?
Yeah, he was posted to New South Wales, the colony of New South Wales, not as governor. Interestingly enough, he was actually going to be Lieutenant Governor in charge of the 73rd Regiment, which was his regiment. And they were going to be sent over to, you know, sort out the, what he thought at the time was the rabble of soldiers and convicts. Because this, of course, is after the Bligh Mutiny of 1808, mm-hmm. where Governor Bligh had been deposed. But the person they had selected, his name was Miles Nightingale, who we might have been celebrating, you know, the age of Nightingale if he hadn't, but he changed his mind anyway. And Macquarie, of course, seeing an opportunity, one last opportunity to make a mark, lobbied hard as he did to replace him, and he was successful. And that is how he became Governor of New South Wales.
So he came out as Lieutenant Governor in charge of the 73rd, but then managed to sort of step up.
No, he was first appointed as Lieutenant Governor. And then before they left, Nightingale had changed his mind, and he lobbied hard and was selected to replace him and became governor.
Now, when they arrive, they discover a curious society here in Sydney, because many of the movers and shakers are actually former convicts already, even by 1810.
That's right. Some of the wealthiest people in the town are emancipists. They have been convicts. They arrived in chains on the ships, and they have now built themselves beautiful mansions. They're running thriving businesses.
I mean, it's so incredibly quick, isn't it?
Yes, it is. No, this doesn't mean that everybody had done this well, but the leading people in the town at this time who had the biggest houses were emancipists. So I think Liz and Locke got a bit of a shock when they sailed into Sydney Cove, because they saw all these mansions and they were expecting a town of mud huts,
Mm-mm.
you know, or bark huts. And so They
And what was their attitude to
well,
that?
Well, that's the interesting thing, and this is one of the most distinctive things about their period. And we celebrate it today, and that is their policy towards these emancipists. They welcomed them into their intergovernment house. They regarded a man who had served his time, and it was men, as should be welcomed back into society at the level at which he had left.
You've done your time. Now
done
you're,
your time,
you're free
now
of
you
the
welcome
stain.
Back. Yes, and he if the man or the men showed promise and ability, he didn't have any hesitation to appoint them to government positions, including the magistracy, which is what got him into trouble with the free settlers and made him a lot of enemies. In that way, I think, you know, they were a little bit naive. Mm. But it's both of them doing this, Elizabeth and Lachlan together. I think the emancipists struck a chord with them because they both came from humble origins themselves but had attained the station in society mm-hmm. which they thought they belonged at.
But at the time, it would have been a reasonably free-thinking attitude to have, would it?
I think so, except it's funny because Lachlan is not... I keep calling him Lockie. I shouldn't do that. Lachlan is not
In love with your subjects, Grace.
I won't. Lachlan is, and Elizabeth, they're not modern thinkers. They're not like us. They don't believe in egalitarianism. This is not egalitarianism. What this is a much more 18th century vision of everybody being in their proper place. But
no, I noticed when you said you defined it as everyone's got the right after serving their sentence to return to the position in society at which they were before they committed their
crime. That's right. And to me, that means it's more like the way we treat prisoners when they come out of prison. Do we accept them? Do we welcome them back into society to their proper place? That is what he was doing. And I think that's a better parallel than saying, oh, he was into egalitarianism.
That's the attitude to the emancipists. What's the attitude to the Aboriginal people?
Well, here I think it's important to note that Elizabeth, she's a key player the whole way along. We should be celebrating both of them and honouring both of them. They're a team. They're a power couple. But Elizabeth is the one who starts taking an interest in the position and the condition of the Aboriginal people. We think she wrote an anonymous letter to the Sydney Gazette seeking information on them. There is some response to that. And what they do after there is a terrible outbreak of violence on the southern frontier in 1814, and their response, which is typical of 18th century responses, I suppose, is to form a school for the children and to set aside some land so that the Sydney Aborigines, they want them to settle down and be farmers.
And they do that at
George's. And they do that at George's Head.
Yeah. So it's an attitude that they will be, if we're open-handed enough, they will be grateful.
They'll be grateful. That's our patronage. Unfortunately, of course, these are completely the wrong people to be dealing with. The frontier war is still going on. The warriors keep fighting. Macquarie is incensed. And then, of course, he sends out the soldiers. And there's the result of that is the Appin Massacre
of 1816. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So we have to remember that, too, as part of the Macquarie period.
Meanwhile, they are building. They've got grand visions, haven't they, for buildings and for the sort of layout of the town.
They do. Now, building is their absolute passion. They love it. And in a way, I think the power that they have here, they're a long way from home, and her talent and skill and taste, because he relies entirely on her for aesthetics. I don't think he's much of an aesthete myself. And they've got resources here to work with as well. And it's such a beautiful landscape, and there is already a lot of good buildings that they can build on. And so what they do is start embellishing Sydney. Sydney is their great project. And there are lots and lots of things we could talk about here. But some of the most impressive are, of course, Macquarie Place, which is in Bridge Street, which is still there. That was decorated with none other than a miniature Greek obelisk, if you please.
And this is 1818.
They opened that up. Why are they doing that? Because that's the sort of thing they were building in genteel urban places in city, the famous provincial resort towns like Bath, like Bristol, like Cheltenham. We were going to be as good as them with these. And then, of course, you can't just have ramshackle houses around these squares. You've got to build fancy villas. And in her bag, Elizabeth had taken, well, in her library, Elizabeth had taken with her Edward Gifford's design for the elegant cottage and small villa. And that was the source of how these buildings got designed.
And you can find some Sydney buildings in this book, in a sense, can you?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Or the prototype.
It's a game of snap, yes. There were two of them built on Macquarie Place at vast expense, I might add, all on the public bill.
And of course, all this then becomes further energised with Francis Greenway, doesn't it?
Francis Greenway is, they must have leapt on him because he brings a proper architectural skills and style. He's from Bristol.
Convicted forger, but an architect.
Yes, I think I have a theory that he may have committed that crime on purpose, but we won't go there today. Anyway, they see this great opportunity to have a good architect at a cut price because he's, after all, a convict. And he supervises their vision, basically, for them. Sometimes he doesn't like working for Elizabeth so much, but they're both behind his designs. And he has more than two types, but the two main types are the classical styles where he builds, you know, the markets and the barracks and the square-towered churches, beautiful buildings. A lot of them we still have. But he also builds the fancy Gothic structures, and I think we can attribute those to Elizabeth. Things like
that's forts. Her urging. Yeah.
It's her urging. They're very romantic. You know, she wants to create this picturesque atmosphere. They build a baronial castle to house the government horses, for goodness sake. It's crazy. Yeah. Their enemies, call these things fugacious toys, and they blame Elizabeth.
And then there's the Macquarie Tower, so-called.
Yes.
The South Head Lighthouse.
Yes, this is the building that got Francis Greenway his emancipation, his pardon. And the beautiful lighthouse, of which there is still an exact copy at South Head. You must go and see it. It's beautiful. And it, of course, was there for guiding ships with the big lamp. But there was another reason to build this. It actually was a prospect tower. It was actually so that genteel people could go in their carriages, climb the tower, watch, you know, gasp at the beautiful views, and then come down and have afternoon tea.
It really is a very optimistic view of Sydney. I'm not here to run a prison colony.
Oh, no.
I'm not here to run a sort of jail. I'm here to build a great city.
He was mindful of all those issues too, the convicts, what to do with them, how to manage them, all that stuff. He reduced the number of lashes that you could give a convict, which is a very humane thing to do in this time. But they were really into creating an environment which was middle class friendly.
and finally, the Domain is the great achievement,
that's
isn't it?
Right. That's the other thing. They used public money to create a new domain. Elizabeth again designs this. She does the sinuous paths, all the plantings. Then, of course, you can still go and sit on Mrs. Macquarie's chair, so you can walk along the paths. And this, again, is meant for genteel people. This is not for your average convict who goes there for all kinds of nefarious reasons. This is for ladies in their best dresses to walk along and take in nature.
What a vision of Sydney. And, of course, just finally, he gets into trouble for all this, doesn't he?
Well, this is their hubris, I think. Why someone hasn't made a film about them, I don't know. It's got everything, this story. But he, in the end, the big spending caught up with them, and they were ordered not to do it, and they ignored the orders. And in the end, Commissioner Big, who was sent out to take stock of the colony, published his reports and condemned the building program. And so it's a terrible irony that their greatest passion and achievements, I think, were the source of ridicule and disgrace for them in the end.
And yet we've got the city to enjoy.
That's right.
Lachlan Macquarie, Governor of New South Wales, 1810 and 1822 to 1822. But let's celebrate him, but let's celebrate Elizabeth as well. The power couple. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Grace Karskens. Another lesson in Self-Improvement Wednesday. Remember, you can test yourself out with Grace's questions on the website. How much of today's lesson will you be able to recall? It's all waiting for you to test you out at abc.net.au/Sydney and click on the Drive Show. Next week, a chapter from our industrial history, the development of the first Holden car in Australia.